We are living in an artificially induced state of consciousness that resembles sleep. The poor and the underclass are growing. Racial justice and human rights are non-existent. We have been lulled into a trance. They have made us indifferent to ourselves, to others. We are focused only on our own gain. That is their primary method of survival. Keep us asleep, keep us selfish, keep us sedate.
You're listening to Toward Anarchy on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Here's your host, Michael Storm.
That moment that you've been waiting for is finally arrived. Hour number two. Go to towardanarchy.com, as always, to follow along, and that's where you'll find the information about my guest who's joining us now, Bennett Hunter, the Canadian Libertarian, at Canadian Libertarian on Rumble and at Canadian Libertarian channel on YouTube. Check out his show, and if you like what you hear, our conversation, there's more of it to be found on his episodes of his podcast. When does your show air?
So mine's basically just... There is no set date or time. I just, when there's something that happens and I want to talk about it, or there's something that's on my mind, that's I usually give ample notice, typically a day or two in advance of people, and then I just kind of go with it. Because, yeah, I'm kind of a free-flowing, freewheeling kind of a guy. So, yeah, not too much.
That's kind of nice. I got to tell you, because I have to do, I'm subject to the network. And so I have timelines. I have to make sure everything fits, and I have to worry about things going over. It's nice when I post a video, when I post a Rumble or something like that, I can add all the extras, and then people get the bonus. It's like a little bonus. And it gives people across the network another reason then to go out and look for the show, too. So it's kind of nice. But I like that idea. I don't know how productive I would be if I didn't have a deadline, actually.
Yeah, no, I hear you. Well, actually, I think that's kind of more conducive, too, with why I ended up, even when I think about it and put all the pieces of the puzzle together, it kind of helps explain why I gravitated towards. Now, luckily, it was kind of something that was in my face anyways, because living in New Brunswick, there's a lot of truck drivers, a lot of logging industry here, although it's, kind of diminished somewhat to a degree. But truck driving was actually one of the few professions where, if you get your deliveries done on time. And of course, as a Canadian truck driver, I actually spent way more time in the U.S. than I did here on my own soil, because that's the long haul thing for us Canadian truck drivers. But I love the fact, once again, it was an occupation where you have all kinds of time to yourself. You don't got a boss standing over your shoulder the whole time. But as long as you're, responsible, do your duties, you basically don't really hear from anyone. And that, like I say, I didn't realize early on. First, it was like it was good paying job. I could live where I live, which is in a rural community. So it's one of those places where your job travels with you. It had lots of positive aspects, but definitely the fact that you have much more autonomy and freedom in that kind of position, less politicking, right? Except until you turn the CB on if you're in like upstate or New York City or something like that, you can get some pretty crazy politicking going on. But for the most part, It's actually quite an occupation that seems to be very conducive with the libertarian mindset. And we've seen that. I always suspected that, but I've seen how that played out in real life, during the whole COVID mandate thing, right? Because who was it that stood up? Who were the people, the group, right? Now, I'm all about the individual, not necessarily the group or the collective. But all those individuals that were comprised in that group were predominantly truck drivers, right? Once again, and you can't help but think that a lot of those particular types, those personality types, were predisposed to, I'm not putting up with a whole lot of shit, right?
Yeah. No, absolutely. Hey, it was kind of a really nice thing to see. There's a couple of instances like that that you've been able to spot around the world over the last couple of years. The farmers in France doing their thing. There's no connection between Canada and France there. it's great to see, because it's so much of what we've seen over the last decade or so since Occupy has been a very presented version of activism. It's a very woke, and it's very, you know, catch me on camera, watch me do what I do, as opposed to the working man getting up and saying, I've had enough of this, I can't take any more.
Well, that to me, I think, is actually the one part that, although you're kind of seeing it now, I guess even people like Elon Musk would kind of fit into that category. I'm sure. Kind of referencing vaguely here right now, is the idea of the whole premise behind like Atlas Shrugged and Fountainhead. So, you know, the entrepreneur, right? The actual people that are productive in society, what has actually kind of shocked my sensibilities these days, and it's still something I'm trying to figure out, is there should be more and more of your Elon Musk types, right? Because, you know, those individuals with those great ideas and those capacities and those entrepreneurs and the real business leaders, you know, if they shrug, like the amount of power those people possess, it's unbelievable. If only they would just, you know, take that, the risk that people like.
Well, it's that question of, we have how many billionaires and not one damn Batman?
Right. Yeah.
What's up unfortunately, with that? I think that so many of them, this is the crux of the conversation, right? The manipulation, the control, those guys aren't where they're at in a lot of cases, because they bucked the system per se. They may have, you know, they didn't go to school, they did their own thing, that's how they bucked the system. But when it comes to the system, they're lock stock. They're right in. Yeah. They're donating to their candidates, they're pushing their guys.
Yeah, they're more of a Machiavellian mindset, find a way to function within, right? Mm. And I kind of get that, which is why I used to have a little bit of disagreements and arguments with people, and even kind of when we were starting, before we even started recording this, sure, we were kind of talking about this whole with minarchism, like learning about liberty and stuff. Mm-hmm. Is that, you know, it is a very, very small amount of people that seem to have the capacity to obviously you have to be placed yourself and the people you care about in a position where you can do that. But a lot of them, they want to play the game, well, I can change things from within. Now, early on, I used to kind of have some disagreements with those people and say, that seems like a Herculean waste of time and resources. But I'm also, because I understand the beauty of the market, which is freedom in general, and the freedom of all this innovation and ideas and diverging ways of doing things, is, yeah, whichever. If it takes a multiple-pronged approach, right, I'll do my things from outside of the system. And if there are people that want to, you know, try to enter into the fray and try to change things from within, I mean, by all means, have a try at it. Do whatever you can. You know, anything that, like I say, anything possible that can help in some way. Now, Elon, I'll even acknowledge, obviously, that guy, to get to where he's at today, he had to play ball with a lot of governments. I mean, there's no mistaking about it. But look at, there's been some, you can actually see some positive benefits of that, even though I would say, of course, he had to sell out any principles along the way. But that's that moral quandary and dilemma I think we all are susceptible to. What do you do? Because the moral person, the ethical person, the person that wants to do only the right thing, once again, sounds good in theory, but under this current system, you're basically, you might as well be handing yourself a gun and shooting yourself in the foot, proverbially, for all of eternity, because you're the ones that's usually going to lose out in that endeavor. Now, in the long term, of course, there's always that potential. But I can see the reasoning and the logic behind some people who are saying, well, you know, you got to get in there and start changing things from within. Now, at the top of the political level, I don't know if that would be any good. But especially for people that want to enter into the business realm, or, you know, get on school boards or some of these things, I think those are great initiatives, because I do see where a lot of the people who just kind of went about life, the live, let live type of people, have gravitated away from these institutions, right?
Right. They've come away from them. And what you're getting at right there is something that I talk about a lot too, even though it's an anarchist perspective. I know that I'm talking to people that are participating in the system and need good information and good ideas about how they're going to participate and navigate in it. And one of the things that I suggest is that the power of your vote greatly increases the closer it is to your home.
Mm, Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Oh, it means more in your backyard, in your community, sure, to participate and get involved and to speak up and say something and do something in your community than it ever will on the sort of the grand stage of the circus that's coming up. We only have, what, 7 more months or something like that for our little circus down here.
Yeah, yeah, that's going to be quite the spectacle to behold for sure. But just to let you know, actually, before we continue on, because I know a lot of people aren't maybe even some of your audience, because there are kind of two types of libertarians, and you're probably familiar with this stuff. Now, early on, like I say, in 2008, 2012, watching the whole Ron Paul thing, yeah, you're learning about these things, and it takes you a little while to put all these principles together, put all the information and sort it out in your mind, right? So I went from the typical minarchist, taking the minarchist position, which, once again, not a hater on the minarchist, whether you're a new person to understand these principles or the philosophy of liberty, I'm not going to hate on anyone, but I am one of those people that at some point in time, I mean, if you're intellectually or ethically honest, you can't even make a case for a minarchist state, right? Because then you're still advocating for the use of violence as a means to an end. So I can't get behind that. So really, I'm a libertarian. But I call myself a philosophical libertarian, not a political libertarian, because there is a difference. And once again, had some disagreements. Even today, I still have the odd disagreement with the political libertarians. I still nowadays, I've trained my mind to think of them as not people that are status light per se, but people that are themselves probably on that intellectual journey. And I'm more than willing to keep walking along with them. You know, they might not get to the final exit where I'm at, maybe, maybe not, but I'm more than willing to continue on that journey, because I know they're at least the kind of people who are willing to leave me the hell alone. Right. So
yeah,
find that
base commonality. That's why you probably find most of your libertarians, anarchists. So anarchist may not work because it's such a weird thing. There's so many leftist anarchists that you can't really say that. But that's why I'd say a good anarchist is going to have a more conservative view of things. I think the person who's realistic about what politics is, you know, it's a straight line kind of thing. There's slavery and there's anarchy and just everything else in between, whether it's conservative right or libertarian somewhere in the middle or left. Yeah. It's all just some lighter form of socialism, some lighter form of slavery. It's not anarchy. And that's kind of the gist of the concept of the idea of the toward anarchy. That's it. It is libertarian related. You know, we were talking before the show, and anybody who watches the Rumble, you'll get to see some of this extra footage up there and hear some, a little bit of the extra conversation. But, it sounded like our upbringing is a lot alike, even though you're over there in Canada. I was here in Colorado at the time, and it seems that there's that same connection. And so the connection here with toward anarchy is directly connected to the Libertarian Party. The Libertarian Party formed by David Nolan and others in Colorado in my backyard just as I was growing up. And that was their initial slogan for the Libertarian Party. That was what David suggested, that be the slogan for the Libertarian Party, toward anarchy, and that the logo actually be literally the Anarchy A with the arrow pointing through it to what at the time was the maximum point of freedom on the Nolan chart, with the arrow pointing through it up to the right-hand corner. Yeah, and so the libertarians today don't, the capital L libertarians, the big L libertarians, they don't know their anarchist roots anymore. They don't know where they've come from.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. And I actually, one thing when it comes to that word anarchy, and I'm glad that people like yourself and others have taken that and wear it with some semblance of pride, because I think the best thing they can do, which is what I've noticed, is they literally want to, and they're really good at, you know, assuming and taking over the language and distorting it to mean whatever they damn well want. Well, I think it's time, and I'm proud of people like yourself and others, and many others, including Ron Paul, has even himself said, and I've had that clip, I'm sure we've all got that clip saved, where he even said, yeah, I'm an anarchist. So yeah, wear that with a badge of honor, and take that word back away from these Antifa. Like, that's the thing. These people, they soil the word. And you know, I explain this to people all the time that are confused. It might take a long time to understand philosophy, But I tell you one thing that I've seen resonates with people when you start discussing stuff like this is I say, you know why we can have the conversation? Like me and you right now, Michael, the only reason why we can have this conversation and understand each other is because we understand the actual defined meanings of the words and terms we use. If we just made up and invented ourselves, whatever these words, it'd be like speaking two different languages with each other. The only way we can have a coherent, cohesive conversation is if we both understand what these words and terms mean. So anarchy has a defined meaning, and it's just without rulers, right? That's it.
Yeah.
Now the problem with that, of course, is not having rulers, that is a great baseline for every human being. No human being should have a ruler, 100%. The problem, of course, with anarchy by itself, and that's why these degenerate leftists or these collectivists jump on board, is it basically suggests that there's no rules.
There's
right?
no rules, man.
Right? Yeah. And you can just make up. But that's the thing. No, that's where, like I say, that's where people like you or I and many others, and like I say, I don't, as you see now, I'm not shy about pointing out, call me an anarchist, I'm fine with that. You know, I'm totally fine with that because I don't believe in having rulers. I'm an adult, right? I don't need rulers. The fact I even think about all the information that I've learned all these days, and when I walk around and see my fellow citizens, part of me actually feels really sorry for them that I see full-grown adults, men and women of my age range in their 50s, that walk around with adolescent minds. And I can't help but think, Jesus, what a shame. What a shame. And what it does to people, a person's self-esteem, right? Their own competence in themselves, God, yeah. right? Or even their curiosity. It just completely diminishes and quashes that stuff, which is why, like I say, I see a lot of fighting out there. But the one good thing I see that's taken place, whether you're talking about the statists, the minarchists, the anarchists, libertarians, voluntarists, is there's a lot of ideas being bantered about these days. And as long as, sure, there's a lot of attempts to quash and silence our voices, but so far that's... They have failed miserably at doing so. They try and
they
try.
Can't really do it to us. No, they can't really do it to voices like ours. And I would say that is because we're not emotionally invested in that system. All of these other voices, if you take somebody like an Alex Jones, you know, it's such an amazing voice for good ideas, such a lousy representation of liberty. You know, as much as he fights and screams for it, all he's screaming for is the status view, the optimum status view maybe of liberty, but it's still the status view of it, and it lacks he's found it out. It's one of the things that I really enjoy seeing the president go through what he's going through right now, because the conservative right in this country and around the world who believe in this BS thing called the rule of law are learning that the rule of law is subject to the rulers. And there's a big problem with that when the rulers all of a sudden decide they don't like this group or that person or that person in that party. And all of a sudden you're seeing an unprecedented attack on somebody who is participating. It's one of the two guys that are going to get elected for president in this nation, and he's on trial. 40-some-odd charges in different counties and all leftist prosecutors and all leftist judges, and you look at this and you go, what the? But not if you actually are not wrapped up in that conservative right, pretending that the rule of law is a thing that exists in this country. Mm. The only thing that exists in this country is justice for the people who are collecting a paycheck. That's it. These judges, these lawyers, these politicians, the cops that they hire, the military that they steal our money for, are only there. They're only there for themselves. I don't know if they were ever there for us. Yeah. Here in America, it's a little bit different. Things a little bit different in Canada, but you still generally have respected, recognized legal rights and protections that are similar to our own here. And the expectations around the world anymore at this point are the basis of the American ideal of freedom, right? We all, that thing that created the Bill of Rights and the idea that, we all are ourselves and we have the right to speak and think for ourselves and we have the right to own things and to protect those things and to protect ourselves. And these, I don't think the people around the world are looking at America and going, Yeah, that's what we want now. It's getting better and better in America. I don't even know where to begin to look at a point in history on our little timeline here that suggests that there was a point that you could ever turn this back. And so that's why I keep that anarchist ideology in that background and as part of the basis for the conversations that I have, because when it comes down to it, at some point it gets too big. That's the bottom line. And I'll say that of anarchy as well. I'm quick to say that anarchy works fantastic between you and I. On this level, anarchy's perfect. I don't rule over you. You don't rule over me. We both participate in our conversation, our lives, whatever, our business together voluntarily. That's it. No expectation other than a little bit of respect, you know, a little bit of common decency between the two of us. I don't think that applies necessarily when you're talking to people who have what they believe to be a higher ideology and democracy and America and all that supposedly a higher ideology. And to me, I just see it as being a higher ideology of slavery. That's a little bit.
Well, what I find most striking today is if you go through history, there's always been, I mean, people, it's the human experience is to be, well, at some point in time, is to be ruled over something or other, whether it's a monarch, a dictator, right, a pharaoh. I mean, it just goes on and on and on and on, right? The tribal leader, the chief, whatever the hell, right?
Yeah.
But what I don't understand, and actually, I think I shared it with you there before we were going live. It's a phrase I kind of coined, and I made my own game up about it, is true liberty requires evolution, not revolution. Because the more I think about that, so revolution sounds good in theory, but even in the actual defined meaning of the word, well, what happens in a revolution? You end up back at the same spot eventually, right?
Evolution, yeah.
That's literally what you end up. And that is, it's not just the figurative way of, it's literally what has happened and transpired and taken place throughout all times in history, is you just end up and then you get a little reprieve for a while, but then you just end up in the same place. So to me, and when I say evolution, not necessarily in the physical sense, but intellectually, like if you think of a human today in Canada, even in statist Canada, even very socialist statist Canada, I could go up to almost every single individual in this country and ask them, there'd be a few rare exceptions, but most people would say, of course I don't advocate for slavery or human ownership. What are you, insane? That's just wrong. Why? Because their ethics has evolved and permeated through the culture enough to the point where it's forbidden. Even a statist, right? Even if secretly inside they might want it, they would never verbalize that vocally and openly, right? Because they know the negative connotations that would come with. Well, that's what it should be to me in terms of people's belief in government. At some point in time, and you just can't help but think, I don't know when that's going to happen, but at some point in time in the future, mark my words, I guarantee it, I'm not a betting man, but if I was, I'd lay everything I own on it to say at some point in time, humanity is going to escape beyond this thing where you just believe. So you mean people believe that they needed rulers? That they needed these corrupt individuals who don't even hold themselves to the same kind of ethics or morality that they hold their subjects to, right? And they're complete walking, talking contradictions and oxymorons. The fact that so many human beings are susceptible for falling for that goddamn nonsense just tells you how thorough and how permeated through the culture it has to be, where they're constantly jamming this ideology into people's heads. Because no normal human being would ever go through their life believing that, oh, I need a ruler. And to let you know just how crazy that is, especially in a country like Canada. Now, you talked about the constitutions. U.S. is actually, I love it. Listen, for a minarchist document, amazing, beautifully drafted. You got to say, for the time, the founding fathers were absolute geniuses. And I can understand how they thought they were setting up a really, and they did a good job. Listen, I would never, right? Pretty good for the first go around.
Well, if they'd have listened to them in outside of some of the actual formal documents where they were like, if you can keep it and things like that, if they'd have listened to those points, we might be a little better off now.
Yes. But my point is, anyways, is that, that it was a great, like I say, it was a great first document. But in Canada, here's the crazy part. So Trudeau invoked the Emergencies Act, which is basically the modern iteration of the War Measures Act, So it was something that, and in Canada, believe it or not, it was his dad was the only other person that used something like Shocker. That in this country.
His but, dad? You
know, yeah, his dad.
His dad? Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
But anyway, so he used that. And the crazy part of it is, even after Judge Mosley, a federal judge, finally come down and looked at it, and he said, you know what? No, it was completely unconstitutional, unjust, and unreasonable, all this. But there's still a lot of people in Canada. And the crazy part is, it's like the lave saying, no, whip me harder, master. But they'll grab our Bill of Rights, because the crazy part about our Bill of Rights is it starts off nice, like, oh, recognize the supremacy of God and the rule of law. But then Canada, in our Charter Bill of Rights, they leave themselves a nice little get out of jail free card with the notwithstanding clause and section one, which says you have all these rights. It should say inherent or inalienable, but they don't say that. But you have all these rights, but we wrote in here in this section one and section 33 where, well, we can override them if we choose to. So to me, and if you're an adult human being, and I've actually had adult human beings say, well, look, it says right here in this piece of paper or this, you know, this document, that no, the government has the authority to take away your rights. Any adult human being that believes that any other human being has the authority to deny or to take away your rights, I mean, that tells me once again, your brain isn't even functioning at the maturity level of post-adolescence. Like, just
they're still almost a caveman level of understanding. Yeah. It's funny because they would accuse us of being the ones who want us to live in that wild, wild west kind of place, but they're literally the ones creating the wild, wild west mentality. Yeah. You got a gang that they've given permission or sucker or whatever to and made it possible for them to legalize the theft and murder of everybody else.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even themselves each other.
It's like I say, it's just astonishing. And like we were even talking about a little bit there before we went live, when I was saying about being raised in a religious family and questioning some of the dogmas and orthodoxy that was put forth to me by religious leaders, right? Like like I was saying to you earlier, I love some of the great stories and meta narratives contained within the Bible, some great ethics in there. But once again, there was so much stuff that was just nonstop contradiction. And I'm a questioning kind of person, even as a child, and nobody had any answers. But these are the people that are the leaders, the thought leaders, like, or the experts, right? It's the experts. Well, it's like, well, if you're the expert, shouldn't you at least have pretty simple answer, or at least some kind of an answer to very simple questions? But none of them ever did. And once again,
this just flashed before my eyes, because we just went through this whole eclipse thing. And did you hear this? Sheila Jackson Lee, she's a representative here out of Texas. And man, this crazy lady, she's in her 70s now, I guess. She's been doing the Congress thing for 30 years or something like that, like 15 terms or something. And she just gone. She's talking about how the moon gives off light and how it's gaseous and. The point being that there's no reason to believe, there's nothing about our political system that dictates that the people who are in it are actually the most capable or the smartest, anything. It's the same thing that I say about an anarchist. Look, so just because somebody calls themselves an anarchist doesn't mean anything. What else are you beside an anarchist? Everybody wants to be unruled and left alone and made and left with their own devices, ultimately. Nobody wants to be ruled over. I'm not impressed by you telling me you're an anarchist. Tell me the next thing. Do you believe that I have the right to own property? Do you have the do you understand that I have the right, the natural right of self-defense, of creating my own wealth and protecting my own wealth? Are you anti-capitalist? That's going to be one of the things I want to know about you, because again, while we're talking about words and understanding and communicating back and forth, this is one of those words that they've gotten a hold of, like liberal, they've grabbed a hold of it and they've destroyed the value of that word. It doesn't mean what it used to, and so you can't trust people who use the word until you say, well, wait a minute, are you a capitalist? Are you an anti-capitalist? Are you a capitalist with, you know, caveats and you could do a little bit of this, you can't do that, government can be in here. Let's get through the labels and get down to who you are as a person. And if we can't even have a conversation where you and I agree that the word capitalism is a good thing, there's a long, we're going to have a long battle to get to any point of freedom, because that's one of those no-brainer kind of things. It shouldn't take that much. What do you mean? I have the natural right to my own wealth and to distribute it and gain it how I see fit as long as I don't violate others? That's the definition of capitalism, the long-form definition of it. Every anarchist should support it. Every libertarian should support it. Every voluntarist should support it. The agorist should support it.
Well, even just something as simple as understanding the difference between the pretense of negative rights and positive rights. If you just understand that, even if you just understand that, it's a quite easy thing. But where I find myself today, and like I say, because I had to fight off some of that dogma from the religious realm that when I grew up in, as an adult, it's like, I'd escaped it, but Israeli's like, no, the dogma is now, it's just, there's a new religion, and it's not new, but people have found themselves a new religion, and it's called statism, right? And it's like, I'm still stuck in this thing where a lot of the people, they still have these weird things where constant contradictions and oxymorons all the time, and a complete lack of ethical framework and principles that they're consistent with. So that's the thing that I found myself, like, that was the thing that really disturbed me. And I find myself today kind of flip-flopping, although I think there might be some convergence, actually, at some point in time. I'm seeing where that's kind of come together. So I like guys like Stefan Molyneux with his he's an amazing philosopher. I love his UPB, which is a secular form of ethics. So take it out of the mystical realm, right? Is he's created this thing, and he wrote a book about it. He's done extensive podcasting and discussions about the UPB, which is universal preferable behavior, which is basically along the lines is like something like the NAP. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's an area where it's like, okay, I can see where you'd want to keep this in the secular realm so that it's not built on dogma or mysticism, because mysticism, as we've seen, even if it has good intentions, can really lead people astray, right? Because then they're taught and to train their brains to believe in things that are fictional constructs. But I also see where we have a lot of people, even your Jordan Petersons. I think he calls himself, he thought he was a liberal, but nowadays he says, I guess I would be considered a conservative. But he's also a psychologist, but he's bringing in the religious aspect of it. So Christianity, and with all these great minds that have kind of, you know, IDW, I guess, is kind of how they phrased themselves earlier on, was the intellectual dark web. But it is quite a convergence of like an atheist, like Stefan Molyneux would consider himself an atheist, you know, philosopher. But then you also have people that are psychologists. Right. Even, I mean, Jordan Peterson functioned in the state. And then you have other people who come from the religious or Christian background who are finding a lot of commonality these days. And why it is because it's that underlying, the underlying ethics, right? That's the importance. And everyone, even most libertarians or anarchists, the kind of typical anarchists like you were alluding to earlier, like the Antifa, they're not the kind of people you want to surround yourself with. But I'm sure if you heard about a guy he's a minarchist libertarian, but he's also Christian, I'm pretty sure you'd be okay with that. Why? Because you understand the underlying ethics that should typically guide that man's way of living and the decisions and the way he treats other people is more conducive with, you know, not having rulers, right? The live, let live mentality. But that's the one thing that I don't know how it's going to play out, but I'm glad to see that there are all these great minds coming together to figure out how are we going to advance or evolve society to the point where we don't need to turn towards anything mystical. It'll be just like math. You can just show people, right? Here's your work. This is ethics. This is a universal way ethics works, and there's no way to get around it. And you know what? Just like with math, if somebody comes up and says 2 + 2 = 5, everybody knows, even young people in grade 3 or 4 know that, you know, 2 + 2 = 4. So it wouldn't take much to get humanity on board with, you know, adopting something like a secular ethics, because most people, not out of benevolence, this is the thing, it would be out of rational self-interest, right?
Yeah.
And that to me is the most important thing for humans. That's the beautiful thing about like Austrian economics, you know, the libertarian movement stuff. People understand actual how incentive structures work and how it'll actually play in the real world, not in a model, right? We understand the thing about libertarians is not that we trust everybody. We actually don't. That's why we don't want rulers, right? We understand that people can be bad and good. We're all fallible. That's why you never want to give anyone the pretense. And of course, bad things are always going to happen. There's always going to be the potential for someone to commit a crime against you. But the hardest and most difficult thing to deal with today is the fact that I'm supposed to, at least if a thief, a common thief comes up, tries to steal my wallet, everyone knows I have the right to defend myself. And nobody is going to, you know, turn against me, hate me, try to shun me from their community if I stand up against a thief. But the weird world we live in today is I will have that happen to me if I stand
up.
No,
you absolutely will have it happen to you. It happens in America more than 100,000 times a year where somebody uses whatever, a firearm or a baseball bat or their fist to defend themselves, to prevent being violated, and state turns around and violates them.
Yeah, well, no, but that's what I mean. I know the state will, but I mean, But what I meant though is like absent the state, I'm saying if someone saw you defending yourself,
no, that's the way it should absolutely be. You would think that's the way we are here. We're supposedly in a society where we recognize the importance of the individual. We've got these goddamn insane leftists out there with the frickin' purple hair and the dresses on the men and all this stuff dancing around saying how important it is to be an individual while calling for socialist controls over everybody's thoughts and over the markets.
Yeah. It's absolutely crazy. And I will just say that in terms of you Americans, listen, I'll tell you, in Canada, and there are days. Well, that's the thing. The problem, of course, is I've born and raised, lived in this country my whole life, so I've got a lot of roots here, right? But there is a certain part of me, and if I could get my entire family, my very close family, at least the people I really love, right, my two boys especially in particular, if I could convince them all to move to the U.S., I'm not the kind of person that would shy away from a fight. I like a good fight, don't get me wrong. But I see America as I've always, as a Canadian, especially even once I started driving truck in my mid-20s, I feel like I was I'm an American at heart, because the culture, or at least what should be the culture, right? The thing, the whole story of you know, King George, right, and thrown off the shackles, like that kind of story really resonates with me. It really does. Whereas in Canada, it's kind of soul crushing, because not only do we have our own dictators here in our own country, but we also have to still to this day, like even people that come to this country, you still got to pledge allegiance to the fucking goddamn king of England. I mean, like, we got redundancy of rulers around here, right? We've got multiple layers of that shit, and it just drives me nuts. But I gotta say, it's people like you, it's the American spirit, the ones at least that still have that proper American spirit, that revolutionary mindset in terms of fuck you, you don't fucking, you know what I mean? But it's like, it's you folks that really have inspired the rest of us around the world. Now, I've seen some Canadians, and I'll count myself in that, who are punching way above our weight for sure. But I got to tell you, it probably wouldn't have happened if it wasn't for the fact that I have folks like you and all the other great people in the United States that I look up to and consider co-patriots myself, that have inspired this kind of fight and resolve, because
I was just saying how I find it hard to believe that there's anybody looking at America as a bright light and hope in this. So it's happening. I hope they're not looking at it as this is it, that it's failed, that there's no hope. That's it. That's the thing that I would be most worried about, because I think that a lot of people in America themselves have given up hope. They really have. I don't think they've given up on their system, and they're just going to sit there and they're going to let it collapse.
Yeah, the people that have been blackpilled, I really wish that there was somebody in their immediate vicinity that could drag them out of that goddamn defeatist mindset. Because, you know, if there's one thing I know for certain, is you will get exactly what you want. If you live in a defeatist mindset, you will get exactly that, and you will fulfill that defeatism, because that's the worst thing. Like I say, I've been down and out in my life, man. I've been fucked over a few times, trust me. But I tell you, I've always looked at it. Now, I'm very much into racing, cars, sports, four-wheelers, ATVs, all that stuff. And I just use that competition, that I'm very competitive and competition driven. And what it is not just external competition. I use that to constantly compete with myself, right? Mm. And I would never let anyone, no matter how down I am, I'll always find a way to try to get back up. Right. I consider myself like that punching bag when you're a kid. You're old enough. You remember that had the sand at the bottom. You knock it over and it just fucking flops back.
Oh,
up.
Yeah.
But that's what it is. And like, I've seen how well that has done for me and my mindset and how it's benefited other people that kind of gravitate to that kind of mindset too. And it has inspired them. And I think that's really important, which is why it's so important when I hear people say, well, what can I do? I'm just one man. Well, I'm only one fucking man too. But I'll tell you, even just me alone have helped to inspire quite a lot of other people just by sheer fact that you were kind of alluding to that early, is it just takes someone to stand up and say no, because that's the thing. People are comfortable, you know, in some really nefarious, terrible situations if they feel that they have to conform, right? But the minute somebody speaks up or stands up or speaks out, it gives those people something to at least be inquisitive or to want to inquire about, well, how does this guy have that kind of resolve and I don't? And I believe that is part of our human spirit, is that there is natural competition within humans. And I mean, some of them are trying to compete. Like, look, really what it is today is people are trying to compete to, you know, bring about actual liberty. And then there's our opponents, which are constantly competing and to play themselves into being the biggest victim. And I just can't help but think, they have got to be on the losing side of this equation, because if it turns out that the fucking victim cult, right, if the victim cult ends up winning against the kind of people that are liberty-oriented, brave, courageous, have the right ideas, then, yeah, I think humanity is in a really bad spot. But I stay positive because I just can't see how they have a lot of mechanisms of control, no doubt about it. But we have the ideas and the ambition, the innovation, the entrepreneurial zeal, and the courage, right? That's the other fucking key factor, is the courage that so many of them lack. So I'm white-pilled when it comes to that. Of course, there's days where I feel down and out and a little bit defeated, but I usually brush that off pretty quick.
Every day I can look at a point and kind of go, yeah, this is why it's not going to work, and I just don't give a damn. I get that thought every day. You have to probably have that thought every day if you're paying attention and you're actually interacting and doing things and finding out what's going on in the world. There's some headline or some comment from some moron somewhere that you just go, all right, that's it. It's just, there's no hope. There's nothing we can do about these people. I'm torn on the thing, and that's why I make these conversations about the conversations and about the people and about me being and doing what I want to do. Because if it becomes about anything else, it's not going to work. It can't be anything else, because I have no particular desire to change or fix the system. I don't care about the system. That's the biggest part of it. I say that a lot, and it probably pisses people off, especially across the network. That I don't care. I don't care about your Second Amendment. I don't care about your First Amendment. I don't give a damn about the Constitution. And I'll tell you why. It should be obvious why. Because they don't care about it. It doesn't mean anything to the system. If the system actually regarded these things for what they are and respected them, then I might give a damn about them. They might carry some weight. But when the jackbooted thugs come marching down the street, I encourage you to go stand out there in the middle of the street with a goddamn Bill of Rights in front of you and see if it stops the bullet.
That was the thing. And once again, whether you're talking about the Federalist Papers, I actually have them all. I have the Federalist.
It's in a nice little library there.
I got them all, because like I say, I really, really love the, like I say, some of the great history of the U.S. for sure. But it really, at the end of the day, it's all up here. If people could just get, I mean, what's most disturbing is how in the hell, we know this, but I'm just saying this for people that maybe don't, although I would imagine the kind of people that are watching this show are probably already there anyways, but what the hell. But it's just a matter of getting people's brains to even just think critically. And like I say, the only reason why that was difficult in the past, especially prior to the internet age, was because we were all completely susceptible and subject to like that conveyor belt of information, and it only come from certain sources. This is the first time in all of human history, not just the 20th century, right? Not just the beginnings of the 21st century. This is the first time in all of human history where all 8 billion of us on this planet have instant access, like even people in really, really third world poor countries have instant access to the breadth of human knowledge. Now, of course, there's a lot of shit. There's a lot of crap amongst there. But I just can't help but think that given enough time, because humanity, if you think about it, since the time we come out of the swamps, or more or less, is we have made great strides. But there's been, you know, we take two steps forward and then one step back. So right now, I can understand how some people get black-pilled, because, yeah, on some days, man, things look very dark, very, very dark. I'll admit that myself. But it's because we're living in the moment, right? Sometimes just it's the best. What I do for myself, I just step back and try to look at the macro picture once in a while. And that's where it really helps inspire me, because I realize that the reason why all this is taking place, the reason why all the status have corralled or circled their wagons, and the media is constantly trying to, you know, put forth the pretense that anyone that doesn't go along with their narrative or misinformation or disinformation, the constant battering and beating of anyone trying to speak openly about liberty and all this stuff. The fact that they're putting so much resources and capital in to try to beat us down, that shows you just even they obviously are quite fearful of the fact that they may at some point in time lose that grip on power. And that power is the control over a person's mind. And once you've lost it, I don't know how well it is to ever get it back. Because I'll tell you that.
That do you turn back to it? Yeah, right. Because there's nothing there. Once you make that connection that the state is just an illusion, you really start to realize that there is no going back. There is no other state. There's only people getting along like we do down here on the ground every single day. And this we talk about. And there's sort of different layers of reality. You mentioned a sort of mythical layer. I was talking about, I went off on a rant on this on last week's show. I basically took up like the last half hour of the first hour talking about this, how we live in these multi-layered realities. And there's this sort of mythical gods and things up here that may or may not have some reality. It may or may not have something to do with where we really are. But in between those, there's a false god layer. There's the state layer. There's the manipulation and control layer that sits on top of the rest of us who are down here on the real ground working and doing these things every single day. And so you have this multi-tiered system of reality, and we recently added a fourth layer to that, an underlayer to that, the internet and virtual reality and this social media, and sending out this multi-layered reality that people like us are probably a lot better at navigating from one to the other, having had a religious background, having had a chance to talk about the ideas and to question them and to, you know, find out if there's any validity to them or not. I'm not sure that everybody has the capacity, but I think they have the will.
Mm-hmm. Well, listen, you say you went on a good rant, and this was last week, so if you wouldn't mind, I love a good rant. So what was there a show? Is there a show
now? Oh, yeah, no, it's just a regular show, towardanarchy.com. It'd be last week's show. It was the 3rd. It was April 3rd, yeah. It was in the first hour, the second half. I was literally just talking about this because I'm trying to offer people some tools for getting through these layers of reality that we exist in. And I think I have a good perspective on them and can show people some different tools because I have proven them, but I've been through them. I am one of those persons that I was raised in a Judeo-Christian understanding. Grandma took me to church. You know, you were talking about grandma yourself there. And my grandma took me to church every weekend. My mother didn't go, but, you know, grandma and I went to church and we'd get on a bus and we did the same thing, man. We went to the Baptist church. We went to the Catholic church. We went to this denomination over here and that denomination over here. She eventually settled on, Methodist. It took a while to come to me, Methodist. And I guess that's because it when you sort of weigh all those other religions and you get down to it, it's one of the freer, more enlightened ones where you can have a conversation. You maybe don't have to worry about some of the weird orthodox things that come before them. So we have that same connection there, and it's an interesting thing to find people that sort of lack any sort of reality basis. They only understand one reality. They have no concept of what's going on off the ground. I don't even know how to put it.
Well, just out of curiosity, you're obviously familiar with Larkin Rose, right?
Oh, yeah. He was on the show here a couple months ago.
Oh, okay, right on. So, yeah, so Larkin, I don't know if you got a chance to talk about it, but are you familiar with the project The Mirror?
No.
Okay, so I think this actually might be one of the things, and I love the Joan Plantation movie, the new one that he did, by the way.
I haven't seen it yet, but I hear such good things.
Yeah, it was really well done. Like, the production values, everything, it looked like basically a typical Hollywood kind of a movie. It was really good, really well done, good directing, great acting, all that stuff. But I think The Mirror, and that's really good. Like, even back in the day when he had just had the little graphic one on YouTube there, the original Joan Plantation, that was a great way to help educate and inform and enlighten people. But I tell you, I think the other one that's going to really, really help is if he gets this mirror thing, and I think he just needs more funding, and he's working on it. But basically, now I've kind of created my own little iteration, but it's only in verbal form, so it's not going to be nearly as good. But it's basically an interactive kind of a, not a game, but let's say you were going to go solve some puzzle thing. So you go into it, and it'll just kind of ask you questions. And based on your own internal thinking and understanding of ethics or anything, it just kind of leads you down to, like, it's asking you, so it's more Socratic dialogue, asking you questions. So rather than someone like me or you, right, finger wagging or trying to tell people, like, this is how you should think, or this is what's right from wrong, it allows the person, the individual, you know, under their own terms, in their own time, you know, in their own private home, to just go through these, answering these questions to the point where at the end of it, if you're consistent, if you're, like, ethically consistent and morally honest or intellectually honest, you end up to the place where you end up as an anarchist because of all the contradictions and the fallacies contained with the whole, you know, the dogma of statism. And I think that, like, a really good, now, like I say, I did mine in just questions. I call it the 4-question quest for freedom. And I just ask people, like, so I'll go up to someone, and I've tried it in my own self with coworkers and people that I talk to and friends. And it actually works. Some of them, some are more susceptible than others. So I'll ask, like, something. The first question is, do I have any legitimate authority to take any money from you without your express implied permission? You know, right? Like, not just the pretense. I mean, without you giving me actual permission. And of course, a person will just say that. I mean, what else are they going to say? It's no, right? And then I say, well, do I have any legitimate authority to dictate how you live as long as you're not harming other people? No. And then you just, it's just a couple other questions. Like, well, okay, well, do I have the authority to delegate that authority to my neighbor? So if I don't have the authority to take from one of my neighbors, like to steal from my neighbors, well, can I delegate that authority to a couple of my other neighbors to go do that on my behalf? Well, no, of course not, they say. So I use me as the example, but I would say, well, you can even use yourself as the example. And anyone that's even remotely intellectually honest and ethically consistent will all come to one conclusion is, well, fuck no, you have no authority. Well, then the last and final question is, well, then if I don't have that authority, well, how the fuck do I delegate an authority I don't have with someone else? Magic? Right? A ballot? Like, I don't get to that's the thing. If I don't have that authority, I obviously can't give that to anyone else. And that, it never gets people to the point where someone like you or I at, that's still quite a long journey to get there where you can make more sense of it. But at least I've seen every single time they at least were like, oh, fuck, that actually makes sense. Okay, now you've caused me to start thinking, which is, at the very least, if I can at least get them to start thinking, well, I mean, at least I'm half step there, right?
Yeah, well, that's the trick. That's the balance that we play here. Knowing that the conversations that we have, the things that we're talking about, even if we're not talking directly to that person that needs to hear it, it's out there. They can find it. And that's all we have at this point, is to have the conversations, the one-on-ones, that you-me level. Somebody was telling me there's some, Robert Kiyosaki or somebody like that out there that's got one of these you-me level conversations. This is where everything works. And then when it starts to get, you start adding more people into that conversation, and it starts to get harder to hear and harder to be heard. And that's what this is all about. This is why I have conversations with persons like yourself, because I think that everybody gets it in the core. I just don't know if they have the courage. You mentioned that. That's a big thing, because it's all, what are we talking about? We're talking about personal responsibility across the board when you're talking about anarchism. You're talking about being responsible for you and yours, and not being able, there's no fallback on that. That you didn't build on your own, that you weren't able to construct on your own. And there isn't now. If you believe that the government is going to be there to help you when you need it the most, good luck.
Yeah.
Good freaking luck for
You know, another thing in addition, not just the courage, that's obviously really, really important, but what I found, and on my mother's side of the family, it's pretty wild, the striking difference. So my dad's side of the family, mostly all private sector individuals, right? Business owners, loggers, stuff like that. My mother's side of the family, which was predominantly five girls and one boy, my Uncle Bennett, he was the one guy that functioned his whole guy. That's who I'm named after. His whole life in the private sector. He worked for a lumberyard in a local community down here. Everyone else, my mother actually was the one exception. She didn't go into, but I seen that there was, it's that they're captured. So four of my five aunts all worked for the state. Now, I don't hate on them for that. I mean, especially in Canada, if you work in the healthcare field, you basically have no choice anyways, because it's illegal to have private options in Canada. So they're kind of stuck. But this is the problem, is it's that capture, right?
Yeah.
Once you're part and parcel of the system, and you're not just your paycheck, but your retirement, everything is reliant on that. Yeah. This is the problem where we're stuck in, right?
That's where we are now. And then there's not really any particularly clear picture out of it, because you have so many various aspects of it that touch everybody's lives, that you have to reassure this person and the next person and the next person that they're not going to lose their whatever it is. Yeah. Unfortunately, Bennett, we're out of time. that's the one thing that I do run into, but, been really great chatting with you.
Yeah, no, it was good, Michael. I really appreciate you having me on, and hopefully
anytime.
We'll do this again sometime.
Yeah.
And maybe at some point in time, if you wouldn't mind, maybe return the favor, and I'll have you on.
Yeah, I would love to be on. Yeah, anytime. You just let me know. That'd
Perfect.
Be great.
Excellent. Yeah. Right on. Well, you have yourself an awesome day, and I really appreciate you bringing me on to your show. I think you've got a nice show going there, and like I say, you Americans keep doing your thing, because, I know what you're saying. Sometimes you can feel, but believe me, there are a lot of people, and it's not just myself. There are a lot of people around the world, because, America has truly been that beacon of liberty. And I mean, especially in Canada, I got to tell you, there's a lot of Canadians that act very resentful and hostile to Americans. But listen, we've all been raised and inundated with a lot of nonstop American culture, whether it's through the airwaves or on television.
Oh, yeah.
So we're all, I consider, in terms of the America, Canadian, tell you the truth, I consider it wouldn't hurt my feelings for you guys to take us over and be the 51st state. I'd be totally cool. Matter of fact, I'm not a statist, but I'll put up the white flag tomorrow, right? If we get to adopt
this. That's got to be better than the total broken socialist system, only a partially broken socialist system. You gotta love it. The time. Bennett Hunter, Canadian Libertarian, at Canadian Libertarian on Rumble, and at Canadian Libertarian Channel on YouTube. Check out towardanarchy.com, of course, for any more information or links that we decide to pop up there. And there will be, as there always is. There's always something extra, and there'll be more information and more links for Bennett there, and Canadian Libertarian as well. Thanks again so much, Bennett, for hanging out with me, and we'll talk to you again real soon. As for the rest of you, back here next week, as always, Dr. Dean Lloyd will join us. Until then, take care.